The lesson was clear. If you're going to do a job, do it right. Do it right the first time, no matter what it is.
My name's Johnny Reinhardt, and I've lived in Southwest Michigan most of my life. It's such a wonderful community full of so many great things, but the best part is the people, families, history, and especially the stories that make it great. And with every story, you have to start somewhere. This is Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Welcome to episode 19, and today my guest is John Prose, and he is somebody that you may know him as former state representative and former state senator here for the state of Michigan, but I consider him a great friend. He is a wonderful community leader, and we've talked many, many times over the years about all kinds of different things, family, life, community. We've had some great laughs, and this conversation, I think, was one of the most fun conversations I've had with him, and I asked him questions and learned things about him that honestly I didn't know. You might be surprised about some of the answers and some of the stories that he tells. So let's just jump right into it and start from the beginning with John Prose. Man, I am happy to be talking with you, John. It is an honor to be able to take a little bit of time to start from the beginning with you, because we've known each other for a number of years now, but in this process of doing this podcast, I've found that I have learned so much more about the wonderful people that we have in this community. And I consider you not only a good friend, but a person that is a lover of Southwest Michigan, because you were born and raised here, right?
Actually, no.
No?
We moved here. You said start from the beginning, all right?
Yeah.
So here we go, right? First off, thank you, Johnny. I appreciate it. It's great to join you. And I've certainly enjoyed the times that we've sat on pink toilets at City Plumbing and had the opportunity to honor Denise Bone. And of course, Denise was with us during those early years then too, a good friend of both of ours and a good friend of many of the people in this community. We played volleyball together in our early 20s down on Lake Michigan.
I've heard those stories.
Oh, yeah. So rest your soul. We all miss Denise, that's for sure. My dad and my mother met in Indianapolis, and I am the product of that marriage in Indianapolis, born in Indy. And then my father, Vietnam era, ended up as a medical doctor, ended up doing his residency and some time in Indianapolis, and then was in the Air Force. And so we were at Homestead Air Force Base in Florida, where my dad was a medical doctor. And in fact, a little known fact, he was the team doc, or what they call the flight surgeon, for the Thunderbirds. The Thunderbirds are, of course, the air demonstration team with the F-16s. They were F-4s back then. And then they, of course, years later became F-16s. But so my dad was in the Air Force, and then when he decided to leave the Air Force after his service to our nation, he chose St. Joseph as the place to set up his medical family practice, and was a family physician here for many, many years. And so in 1975, at the age of five, do the math quickly, right? 51 years old, we moved here to St. Joseph over on Sunset Court in northern Bering County.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that. You're a Florida kid.
Well, via Florida, right?
Yeah, a military kid. Yeah.
That's right. So I'm an Indy kid. I'm a Indy 500 kid. It was kind of a national holiday for the Indy 500 in our house, Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. My dad was on Parnelli Jones pit crew and drove the pace car at one point in time during one of the parades. And we're a big Indy family, but then that, of course, has then transitioned since I was five. This is roots. This is home. This is where I served. And this is where I served with Congressman Upton then too for a period of time. So this is home.
Do you remember any of the Thunderbird moments? I mean, obviously you moved when you were five. Do you remember that stuff?
I do. There were two very distinct memories, both involving planes. And I still just have this love of military jets and planes, which I sounds really kind of strange. But I think it's because of those early memories. There would be an air show every year. And of course, Homestead is just south of Miami. It got blown away in Hurricane Andrew, if you recall. Hurricane Andrew just destroyed the Air Force Base. And so they shuttered the whole thing. I think there, in fact, is an Indy 500 track there. I think there's an oval down there now for car racing. But at any rate, it's some of the first memories that I have was sitting in the cockpit of a B-52, sitting in the cockpit of an F-4. They would do an air show, but they would open it up to the base and base families in advance of the actual air show. So it was just the base and the base families themselves, military personnel and families that would be able to be on deck, if you will, and see the jets up close and everything else. I remember that as a 4 and 5 year old before we moved to St. Joseph. And of course, I've been here in Northern Bering County since.
Do you know how to fly a plane?
I do not. I do
not.
So
you never learned, even as a child?
So I sail the oceans, the waters of Lake Michigan, but I don't sail the skies, if you will. And it, you know, that the nautical terms that you see on the water are the same terms that you see in the air too. Yeah.
But you never learned. But do you still have that dream of one day flying a plane?
I really have. Absolutely. And instead what I did is drove back and forth to the Capitol for 14 years straight, 3 days a week. So yeah, it was a different sort of flying, I suppose. I took my life into my own hands. I was on 94 and 69 that whole way, right?
I think that's more treacherous than the most treacherous of skies, for sure.
I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. But yeah, someday, that's always been a dream. Maybe someday a private pilot's license.
That would be nice to, you know, go to, you know, Benton Harbor Airport and then fly to Lansing. That would be a fun little trip.
It would be. I agree with you. It would have saved I-69, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So your dad obviously was a doctor for many, many years and served this community, but you never wanted to be to follow in his footsteps as a doctor.
No, you know, I got to watch him in his bedside manner.
Yeah.
He was always working with his patients, and that included whether we were on our way out of church at St. Joe Catholic, if we were on our way to, you know, at a restaurant or a bar or whatever with our family. Me and my sisters just grew up recognizing that my dad was very much a part of the community and his patients were everywhere. Johnny, I'll tell you, there almost wasn't a day that went by that somebody didn't stop and say, "Hey, you delivered my kid," or what have you. And that was back when family docs did do it all.
Right.
It really isn't that way any longer. You know, OBGYN are really the ones that do OB now, obstetrics and delivering babies. But dad did all the way up until the late 90s, early 2000s, continue to deliver babies. And then malpractice insurance just became so cost prohibitive. Sure. He really had to drop what was the favorite part of his practice. And now since he's passed, which has just been about 7 years now, since he died, there isn't a week that goes by that somebody doesn't say something about knowing my father or having some sort of a connection to him, or he delivered my child and my kid's 40 years old, which meant that he probably missed a swim meet of mine or something like that, just to be there to deliver a baby.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure. Did he ever drag you along for any house calls or things like that, that he had to make probably as a famous business?
Yeah. You know, we would go, sometimes after church over to the nursing home, for example. So if he had patients in the nursing home, he would round on the patients with us right there until we wouldn't do it in the hospital. That was different. We weren't allowed really to go in. I don't think that could happen in today's world, even in the nursing homes or in the long-term care facilities. But, you know, Johnny, it was from that sort of community care perspective and that I got to watch what it was like to be a part of the community in a way where he continued to give and give and give. And I feel like that was a bit of my calling then too, to serve not only for Congressman Upton as his deputy chief of staff, and then ultimately as an elected official here in Bering County.
Yeah. I was going to say that probably that need for serving the community and just seeing what your dad was doing, you used a lot of those things that you picked up on. And yeah, you didn't follow in his footsteps as a doctor, but you followed in his footsteps as a servant of the community, I guess, as being a representative as well as a senator. What was it like growing up in high school? You went to what, Lake Michigan Catholic, correct?
I did, yes. Yeah. You know, what was interesting at the time, this happened just this last week. I was, you'll love this story. I had a little Facebook post just honoring my dad.
Saw that.
On the day that he had passed away 7 years ago. And it was in that conversation that I just said, "Hey, so what do you remember, folks? You know, what do you remember?" And one of my classmates, she says, I remember the talk. We were separated. Boys went to one room, girls went to another room. And apparently my dad did the talk for the girls.
Oh, no.
Well, right. Blew my mind. I have completely blocked it 100% from my mind. And as she put this post out there, I responded quickly like, oh, my goodness, are you kidding? I'm nervous even hearing this right now. Are you kidding? My dad did the talk for the girls. And she said, yes, I literally can. I could never look at your dad again after that talk. So, yeah, it was a little bit uncomfortable. But, you know, my dad the physicals that you would take, you had to have an athletic physical to be able to play athletic high school sports. He gave those away for free and did all of Lake Michigan Catholic for, I don't know, 20 years or so. He and Dr. George Heenan, also a family doc in the community who was a partner of my dad's at Family Physicians of St. Joseph. It was a big deal to him to try to give back to the community like that. And he was on Cornerstone Alliance board. He was the president of Birthright and Twin City Area Catholic School Fund. Yeah, very, very engaged in the community.
Were you intimidated at all when being, you know, did you feel like you were in the shadows of your father sometimes? Like, because I know for me, my dad was one of those, everybody knew his name, everybody knew who he was and things like that. So I was sort of that quiet observer in the background. Were you kind of doing the same thing, or did you kind of get out there and express your feelings when you were, you know, a kid and kind of, you know, were you extroverted, I guess?
Yeah, I think I think everybody has a bit of a shadow to deal with, good, bad, or indifferent, right? I mean, our parents are who they are, and, you know, my children have now had to manage that question then too, and I would be interested to hear their answers if they were with us today. And we can talk about that in a bit, but I do think, to answer your question, that I felt I had something to live up to. There's no question about that. And so I think I worked extra hard to always try to live up to his expectations and really what I knew others saw of him in the community. But at the end of the day, I honestly felt like I was going to carve a different path, but it was going to be a path of service. And amazingly, I've been blessed and fortunate that enough folks in Southwest Michigan agreed that I would do a good job. And I don't think for a moment that that happens without my dad's good work too. I mean, we build upon and we stand upon the shoulders of those that came before us. And ultimately my dad's touch, I remember being in the Hartford Strawberry Festival parade. I'm running for Senate at that point. He's in the parade with me.
Yeah.
And I've already been a state representative for 5 years. I'm now running for Michigan Senate. Van Buren County, Hartford, was in fact in the Senate district. And so I was in the parade, Strawberry Festival parade. And I remember distinctly half of the people saying, Dr. Prose, good to see you, waving at him as much as it was, Representative Prose, nice to see you. And that's a cherished memory, Johnny.
Yeah. It's also like you think you're the rock star, but then there's an even bigger rock star that shows up, and that's your
dad. I didn't deliver that woman's baby, right?
Right.
I
mean, yeah,
that's a big deal.
Yeah. you're at different levels to different eyes of people. So yeah,
absolutely.
So what was high school John Prose like? Obviously, probably pretty good student, right?
I was okay. I was so busy and involved in so many other areas and activities. I did the thespian thing. I was in plays and musicals. I played three sports a year until my junior year when I recognized that I was not good at basketball. But I played tennis and golf and basketball all the way through. I swam competitively until I was in eighth grade and then stayed at Lake Michigan Catholic. And did not swim in high school, but then swam in college. So I continued my athletic career, if you will, by swimming at Marquette University in Milwaukee. But so during those high school years, I was just involved in so many different things. I worked also at Tosi's as a busboy. I did all of those sorts of things that kept me very, very busy. And I wouldn't say that schoolwork was number one in my priority list. I finished strong enough to be able to get into Marquette and ironic, but you know, I think I went from, I don't know, maybe a 3.4 in high school, 3.4 GPA in high school, to a 3.75 at Marquette, and then grad school was a 4.0. So it's just funny. You figure your way through these things, yeah. And I was, like I said, super busy and super engaged in lots of different groups. I don't know. Oh, and by the way, zero interest in student government.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. You didn't do like a Key Club or you know, any sort of the debate team or any of that sort.
No, I didn't want anything to do with all that, which is funny because I've always kind of honestly kind of run away from an interest in elective service or serving as an elective representative. And yet here it is, you know, 26, 27 years later since I started working for Upton that I did that on my own for 14 years after 10 years with Fred. I mean, it's a really interesting, or almost 10 years with Fred. It's really interesting that I just didn't have any, I didn't do it at Marquette. I didn't get into student government at Marquette. I just always kind of felt like I could always do it. Sure. Why do I need to worry about it? Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you think about it. It's one of those where if you learn all that stuff way at an early age, you almost get sort of jaded in the end and just sort of, you don't have the experience as a community member and, you know, and you go into sports or extracurriculars and you spend some time around other people and just being in the community. That's the lessons you learn. Those are the things and the skills you learn, not in a classroom where you have a debate team and you make up all those things. Yeah, those help. But like you said, it's one of those that I don't need to spend all of my time on that because then I wouldn't be able to spend time on real life, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. And that, again, goes back to my dad's lesson, right? I mean, he would say that 70 to 75% of his entire practice wasn't medical.
Mm-hmm.
It was counseling.
Yeah.
It was listening and counseling. And ultimately, you know, Jack Baker, the first district director for Upton who hired me into Fred's office, ultimately, Fred did, obviously, but the district director is the one who I was working for. And Jack Baker said, look, John, you're paid to listen for Fred, but you're paid to listen. That's the idea behind it. And so I took that philosophy very seriously because it's exactly what my dad did. And so I utilized it in the government service side of the equation. He utilized it in the exam room where he listened intently to the patient in front of him. And I'd like to think that at the end of the day in my service, the votes that I cast, folks would at least recognize that they were heard. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are those that would listen to this today that would say, pros never paid attention to my position. Maybe I didn't vote your position, but sure. I hope that at the end, you knew you had a voice and me listening and responding as best I could to explain why I chose the path that I did or chose the yes vote or the no vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is what is important. And like you said, whether you're a doctor or a politician, that time of listening and observing and understanding what is going on and then learning about the process of all this stuff, because the bill is not put together just because of this is what needs to happen. It's built upon the foundations of what people care about and how you look to the future and how that, you know, that thing can affect the future of not only your community, but as a whole in the state, or if you're in, you know, national government or anything of that sort, you have to think about what's beyond just, you know, you putting that signature next to your name of your vote.
That's exactly right.
It's so important to do all that stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You got it.
What's the best piece of advice that your dad gave you that then you have passed on to your kids?
Right. I think the best advice probably goes back to one of the most painful experiences I had. I wanted to go play with some friends in the neighborhood. I mowed the lawn and I ran. You remember back when it was push mowers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Exactly. So I pushed this thing and I pretty much ran over the entire lawn because they're playing and having fun and I'm supposed to mow the lawn. So I mowed the lawn and what ended up happening, Johnny, is I missed some spots, as you can imagine, if you're running behind a lawnmower. And he came home to inspect.
Of course.
And there were a couple little strips that, you know, yay wide with 3 feet long or whatever. And he came back and he says, "That's excellent." I said, "Thanks, Dad. I'm heading out. See you later." And he says, no, come here. Lower the blade." "Okay. Why? Next time you want me to?" "No, you're going to mow it again right now. And you're going to do it right the first time. And that has stuck with me for, since it happened. Mm-hmm. First off, because I was really angry with him. But the lesson was clear. If you're going to do a job, do it right. Do it right the first time. And take some pride in the work that you have. And before you, if it's as menial as lawn work, which is very, very important, and you're going to do it right, no matter what it is. And you know what? And I sure hope that a cardiovascular surgeon does the same thing, right? Do it right the first time. You don't want to get it wrong a second time, right? Or the first time. So at any rate, I that one was one of the biggest lessons, and I've tried to instill that in my kids. And the goal of that has been, in my mind, in with my three children, has been whatever choice you make, make sure that the choice gives you as many options as possible. So think through what, mm-hmm. what the result of that choice is. Does that leave you with more options?
Absolutely.
If it doesn't leave you with more options, and you've minimized your options, then perhaps that's not the right choice.
That's so true. And obviously that also translated very easily into political career, right? And working as a servant as the House of Representatives as well as Senate, is that you got to think about your choices because the effect that it may right. have. And that's, you don't want to rush through and say, you know, I didn't have time to read this or look at this. So this is what everybody else tells me I should do. It's just like, you know, if you didn't study for a test and somebody says, just put B, you know, put right. B for everything. It's like, that's right. not gonna, that's that, that not only is going to be wrong, but also 9 times out of 10, but also it's going to affect back at you. Because they'll look exactly. at your name being the one next to a vote or a test. So
that's exactly right.
When you got out of college, and you did you say, "All right, now I want to serve as you know, working in Fred Upton's office," or were you kind of looking around as maybe I need to do something and find some sort of thing now that I'm graduated? I need to find a job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So because I put that decision off, I went to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Michigan State from Marquette University and got a master's in education, which is not terribly well known because it doesn't appear as though I utilized a master's in higher education for that purpose. But the skills and talents of dealing with people, and it really was a personnel degree. It mm-hmm. was as close to an MBA and the master's of education that you could get, from the perspective that it was all about personnel management and people management, and sure. and university administration is really about diverse groups of people coming together under the mission of a particular educational institution. So I utilized that, I think, more often than I ever would have expected. My undergrad was political science, and so it fit kind of what I found to be the easiest for me. I had professors that, you know, I enjoyed it the most, and I liked writing about it, and I felt like it was pretty easy to do. You know, so maybe sometimes you find the easy path because that is, in fact, the path that you're most passionate about and mm-hmm. know how to manage the best. It's kind of the way it worked for me. But then I looked at myself and said, well, do I want to be licking envelopes in a fundraising development office
right.
and at Michigan State or any other university? And I thought, boy, I don't know. And that's when Jack Baker, the district director from Upton's office, because of an internship that I had in my junior and senior year at Marquette, knew of me and said, "Hey, maybe Provost should come on in."
Mm-hmm.
Did that for 3 years and then left. And during that period of time, coached swimming, by the way, for a whole lot of folks here in Southwest Michigan for St. Joe Aquatics. Loved doing that. And then spent 2 years in home building and real estate development before then going back to Fred's office as deputy chief of staff and district director, where I spent another 6 years. Mm-hmm. And it was within that time that I looked at it and said, I better have some goals and objectives. I can't just go about life just kind of popping from one job to the next. What do I want to go do? And term limits was just coming into being. And I thought, you know what? I bet I could be a pretty decent state representative if I listened carefully and developed some support and developed new experiences and listened to how Fred did what he did and went around with him and understood the process better. And in particular, the process here in district with voters, mm-hmm. I had opportunities to go to Washington. And I thought, you know, as much as I love Washington and love the politics and the committee process and all of that, it really is about the people that elect you. And so I stayed here in district. And in essence, the rest is history. There was an opportunity then to run in 2004 with the open seat when now Judge Lasada was termed out.
Yeah.
And so I ran for his open seat and won in 2004.
So what was that like with when you put your name on the ballot, I guess, to say, okay, this is going to happen now. And with the foundations that you've had from the experience of what you learned, but also the lessons that your family and your father gave you, what was going through your mind when it was like, okay, I'm doing this thing. I'm putting my name on this piece of paper.
Yeah, it was terrifying. I knew it was right, but it was terrifying because there was no turning back. I'm now asking you, a constituent in Southwest Michigan, to trust me to be your voice in the legislative process, a representative voice in the legislative process. And previous to that, I had carried Fred's message,
mm-hmm.
like I said, for almost a decade. I answered questions for Fred all the time. I listened carefully to Fred and then utilized that same tone, that same dialect, that same answer I would give on behalf of Fred. I hope I did it well. He and I are still close friends to this day and talk fairly often just to mm-hmm. keep up with each other and families. But I will tell you that it became real when I had to answer the question for who I was. Because you're buying a piece of me, if you will,
right?
In that relationship that says, all right, Johnny, I want your vote so that I can represent you. You're investing your vote in my representation. I recognized pretty quickly then that what is it that I'm going to stand for? Where do I fit in this equation? And now I have to answer the question for myself, not for Fred or on behalf of Fred. So that was a sea change for me, was to go from the guy who represented the guy to the guy who is the guy on the front door.
Yeah.
And that was a big, big change. And it took me a while to get over the fact that not everybody was going to like me.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to that being in the shadows of someone, you know, that comes before you, of the lessons you learn from, you know, knowing and carving your own path as a kid, doing the things that you felt was right for you, not what, okay, everybody says, well, you know, your dad's a doctor, you're going to be a doctor. That's the path you now should be. But then also working with Fred and finding your voice off of that. And that's another added challenge. Was there a moment that you remember as that now I'm not following the roadmap that was given to me. Now I'm carving my new path. Do you remember that moment of when that happened?
It happened well before I was elected.
Mm-hmm.
I had known, like I said, when I went back to Fred's office, I knew that I had to go back. And you know, big things were happening in my life at the time too, Johnny, where my wife Christy and I had begun dating again. We actually dated in college, but then 5 years later reconnected, and that created a really cataclysmic shift in a positive way, right? But it set the stage for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. And it set the stage for everything that had happened. Bought a house, started dating Christy again, planned on marriage. She said yes, thank goodness. You know, all those things were all happening at the same time that I also went back to Fred's office. And in that period of time, then there was a bit of an understanding that, hey, look, I might be able to run for office, but now it's bigger than me. So I had already kind of crossed that path into the reality of us as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Elena came along in 2001 and is now a freshman at Marquette, where Christy and I both met. in Milwaukee, and Jack came along 17 months later after that, and is going to be a freshman at Butler this fall. And then Nora came along in my first term in the Michigan House, and she'll be ninth grade at Lake Michigan Catholic. So it's an exciting time for us as a family. But I would say that, to answer your question, that kind of crossed that river prior to even right. raising my hand and saying, "Hey, look, I think I could do well to serve as your representative. Do you agree? And would you be willing to invest in me with your vote?"
Which is great, because I think that is what's needed. You could spend your entire terms in office just kind of following the guidelines that are given to you about this is kind of how everybody else in right. the party or whatever, this is how we would do it. And you did said, "No, I'm actually going to take some time to listen to not only right. the people in my community, but also the people that I'm working alongside with, my colleagues, and having discussions instead of just, right. Putting my stamp on this is what the answers that were already given to me."
And in time, you learn that in the interplay of 110 representatives, right? You learn over that period of time where the push and pull is, mm-hmm. and whom you can trust because they're learned on a particular topic. They're maybe not expert, but they certainly have more knowledge base than you do. I mean, there's mm-hmm. hundreds of topics that we have in the legislative process in any one week. So are you able to quickly discern valued information versus information that may not, in fact, be valued? It may be purposeful because a particular legislative initiative has the backing of a certain group or a right. certain organization, and they have a self-interest in success in that particular topic. I will say that there was one experience early in my first year, and I was really struggling with a decision on what to do with it. And I took the political decision. And I remember the very next day, waking up in the morning and looking myself in the mirror. And this is the honest truth, right? Can you look yourself in the mirror?
Right.
And I was so disappointed in myself for having taken the political decision as opposed to what was the right decision. And I knew in my heart of hearts, but I thought, well, I want to be able to get along.
Sure.
I want to be able to be liked in my vote. I mm-hmm. want to be able to, whatever the topic was at the time. And I remember it, but I'm not going to tell you. And it was a moment that set the stage for the next 13 years of service.
Yeah.
Every one of the votes, I can tell you, since that point forward, that one vote, which was really inconsequential in the end of the day, but I knew that I made it incorrectly. Mm. I couldn't look myself in the mirror, and I couldn't look my mom or my wife or my future children at that point, or two of my children. The third child wasn't along yet, but I wouldn't have been able to look them and explain it that I had made the right vote. Every other vote that I can promise you, I knew after that I better be right with it, and I better be right with it philosophically, and I better be able to explain it to you, the constituents.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so important too. And let me ask you this as a sidebar. Yeah. Did you ask Christy to marry you by using a ballot? Because if you didn't, you missed an opportunity, and maybe right. on your anniversary, you do that as a let's renew our vows.
That's right. It was a binary choice. It was either yes, I'm going to vote for him, or I'm not going to vote for him. Right? No. Yeah. No, I did. Didn't do it like that. She's from Omaha, Nebraska, so I proposed in Omaha. Okay. The day after her brother was married, and her brother's a couple years younger than she is. So I waited until we put them on a plane for their honeymoon and then asked her to marry me. And fortunately, her dad said, "Good luck. I'm with you and I'm praying for you." And then the second question that I asked was of Christy, and she said yes. So here we are.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
The ballot thing, I think, is...
That would be a brilliant way to do it. Maybe in the wedding vows. Yeah. Right? Do it again.
There you go. Yeah. Renew your vows. Put it, do you still say yes?
Do you still say yes? Right.
Renew my term.
Renew husband. My term. Exactly. It's a life term though, Johnny. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's no term limit here on this one. It's a lifetime one. But that's the thing that, like you were saying, is that, looking not only yourself in the mirror, but also going back home to family, and then not just your people in the community, but being able to look at your family and say, these decisions, which may not directly affect you, you know, you have to feel good about that stuff
right.
at any right. time. Any decision. I mean, not even a political decision to vote. It's any decision you make in life. You want that to be something you can look at your family and say, I made the right decision based off of what I feel in my heart, that's but right. also you got to think of beyond yourself.
Right. And I think the interesting thing is too, is that the longer that I was in the legislature, the more I could look back on those decisions and see whether they worked or not. You know, and time has a way of revealing whether or not the information you had at that particular moment when you made the decision was the correct information or mm-hmm. information that was based on the best information that you had. And that ultimately is the challenge, I think, too, is you're making a decision at a point in time that will change the trajectory of a particular topic, whatever that may be. For example, today's energy law I wrote with Senator Mike Knopf's. And so energy in Michigan, and in particular, like the renewable portfolio mm-hmm. standard that, mm-hmm. that sets the amount of green energy that is a part of our energy mix in Michigan, was the bill that I wrote and negotiated with dozens of special interest groups, dozens of individual legislators, and then ultimately the governor, who signed the bills into law. And those sorts of conversations and back and forth that you go through really put you in a unique position to take the best information you have at the time. Now, things change over time, and you look back on it and you say, well, it didn't exactly work the way we had hoped, or it right. did, and it helped to pursue even greater success with green energy, for example. We've seen the cost of green energy come down so significantly, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That in part is because the government started to mandate or to put goals. We didn't mandate it, but we put goals out there that said, you know, 20% right. green by X, 15% green by Y, that sort of thing. That is a really important trajectory that was put into place. And we've seen now looking back that that was effective. But not every legislative initiative is effective when you look back. So you have to be easy on yourself at the end of the day. You did the best you could with the information that you had.
Yeah. Real quick, if you are the one that wrote the bill and then you are now out of office, do you still have a way of, you know, saying, hey, you know, make this happen, don't change anything, or anything like that? Or is it pretty much once you're done, you can't really be involved in that anymore?
That's a really good question. I also wrote the criminal justice reform package in 2016 that became law in 2017. 23 bills that I wrote, 19 of them became law. I handed them out to everybody else so that I could have as many people supporting sure. me as possible. And there are a few of those things that I have weighed in with current legislators and said, hey, there was a reason why we did what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful. Times change, things change, landscapes sure. change. I understand that. And you're an elected official that has your own goals and objectives and need to engage appropriately. But be cautious in how you move forward or change the reasons that we did what we did, right? And the idea is that how do we have a safer environment, less victimization, fewer costs to the community, less cost to the taxpayers for incarcerating people, lower recidivism rate, fixing the underlying problems that exist through mental health and drug courts and sobriety courts and so forth. Those were all a part of the work that I had done. And you hate to see that unwound mm-hmm. just a few years later, because I'm not there to shepherd it through.
Right. Yeah. That's gotta be tough for mm-hmm. sure to be able to not be able to do some of that stuff. So you're done with all that now, but where are you going from here? What's your goals? What, you know, in life or in sure. career? I mean, are you going to be a teacher or what do you got planned?
I do love to teach. I love to coach swimming, right? I mean, I would do that again at some point in time. For now, I'm executive director of the Strategic Leadership Council here in Berrien County, coordinating a lot of the major CEOs mm-hmm. of organizations throughout Berrien County, as well as chief elected officials, right? They're also a part of this organization. And the idea behind this Strategic Leadership Council is collective impact, where all of us together are coordinating our efforts towards solving big initiatives in the community,
mm-hmm.
transportation, housing, Inner Harbor development, leadership development for young business individuals, making sure that we look at health equity issues and how can we solve them from a more global perspective? How can we align people towards solving those problems? That one keeps me very, very involved here locally, which I love the chance to be able to continue to coordinate these great leaders and elected officials throughout the region. At the same time, though, I'm also doing work for several other in my consulting business, both at the state and federal level, where I'm offering suggestions and thoughts on how to engage the legislative process, whom you might use in terms of lobbying, if you needed to lobby legislators or elected officials. But for the time being, most people don't understand even how to open the page of that book. And I'll add this one. I think the key to anything that we've done over the years or that I've done over the years has been to ask the next question. It's not so much the headline. It's not so much even the article itself. It's the why behind all of it.
Right.
Can you dig deeper into the why behind it? There's a reason that President Biden appointed former Governor Granholm Secretary of Energy. What's the turn the page on that? What is the reason behind that? And and there are political reasons, and there are probably very good practical reasons too. Not the least of which is that I also helped to write the law in 2006, 2007 that Jennifer Granholm signed into law, which was the energy law then. I was on the committee that did so. I was the vice chair of the committee and was the minority vice chair that helped to push that through with bipartisan support. So always ask the next question, the why. What was the reason behind it? Don't just take the surface level answer. Dig a little bit deeper. And that's what I've tried to do in my legislative work, and then now in my work as a consultant and as executive director of Strategic Leadership Council. Let's dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, I think. And you like use the foundation of the things that you've learned throughout life and through your career, and then also look forward.
Exactly.
I look forward to more conversations with you about all kinds of different stuff. But one thing I do want to ask, or a couple of last things that I'd like to ask everybody, is what is something that someone might not know about you? I know we've kind of touched the surface on a few things, but what's something that somebody may not know about you?
That may not know about me?
Yeah.
Goodness. I've been pretty transparent and open in just about everything that I've done, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's pretty much an open book. You may not know that I had my first hole-in-one in golf 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
You did? Where?
Yeah, absolutely. I got to share it with my father-in-law. I got to share it with my best buddy who was in from Chicago, and I got to share it with a local guy by the name of Adam Reese, who is just a wonderful friend here in town too, and his wife is a communications and government affairs for Whirlpool. So we had the four of us together, my father-in-law, Marty, and Joe Dedan, who grew up in this community, beaten into the wind. It's kind of like a fish story now, right? That may be something that you don't know, but it was this big. It was 157 yards on number four at Harbor Shores, and the wind was just beating down against it. Got to watch it drop in, and it was a complete shock and surprise. It was a blast.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm surprised I didn't see pictures of this. Were there?
There are pictures. I didn't post it because I thought, you know what? Some things are just best to be between us and the family and those of us who cheered loudly and had a good time afterwards.
And it's kind of one of those, no one's going to believe this kind of moment.
Yeah, that's exactly
unless
right.
somebody
yeah.
had video of it. It's like, yeah, anybody could walk on that course and say, yeah, I got a hole in one right here.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of fun. So it was exciting and fun, and it was completely unexpected. And my father-in-law says, well, you always expect it when you step up there.
Right.
No, Marty, really, I didn't. I've never expected a hole-in-one. I've wanted to get close. I'd like a birdie, but.
Wonderful. Well, what would you, if you were to title an autobiography, like a running autobiography, what would you title it right now?
Oh, another good question. Faith and Family. And then I would probably put next to that faith, family, service. I think that those are the, I've tried to rely upon my faith and to think how best to serve. And it's always been because of the foundation of family that has started that conversation for me. So faith in the direction that's being laid out before me and having the trust in that faith. built upon the shoulders of family. Mm-hmm. We talked an awful lot earlier in the podcast here about my father and some of the experiences I had with him and the training and the teaching that he provided for me and my mother, obviously, too. I mean, she goes without saying, and she's still with us, thank God. And then finally, service. What are you going to do to make it a little bit better than where you left it? You know, my old colleague, Al Pasholka, he uses that phrase a lot, right? Al would say that make sure that it's better than when you first saw it. Make it, don't use things up. Instead, make it better than when you first saw it. And that's ultimately what I've tried to do along the way then, too. And really, that's the example that Fred has had for me, too, in public service. So faith, family, and service.
I like it. I like it. Well, John, I've had, like I said, it's been an honor to be able to chat with you, and I've had a great time in this past 45 minutes or so that we've been chatting, and I look forward to more conversations in the future.
Absolutely. That was just from the beginning. We can start from there and continue on.
Thank you for listening to Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Special thanks to our guests for telling their stories, and if you have a story to tell, I'd love to hear more. Please reach out to me by emailing letstalk@wsjm.com. That's letstalk@wsjm.com. You can listen to this podcast and all the episodes wherever you like to listen to podcasts, and be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. This is a Midwest Family production. I'm Johnny Reinhart. Join me next time for another great story on Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan.